we got to do a better job telling the public of how vital we are to the health and infrastructure of every community in this country.
Hello and welcome to the Better Care Podcast, where we share the stories and insights of clinicians, healthcare leaders, and innovators who are improving the way clinicians work and deliver care. In today's episode, Evidence Care CEO Bo Bartholomew sits down with LifePoint Health's Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer Jason Zachariah. This episode was recorded during Nashville Healthcare Sessions 2025 conference, where Bo and Jason dug into the realities of running a large, diversified health system spanning acute care, rehabilitation, behavioral health, and hundreds of care sites nationwide. The conversation focuses on building clinician-centered workflows that stick, improving patient flow and bed management, strengthening rural access, and creating a culture of belonging where people can do their best work. If you're a hospital executive focused on operational excellence, leadership, and scaling what works across different care settings, this episode is for you. So enjoy this conversation with Bo Bartholomew and Jason Zachariah.
I want to welcome everybody back to the Better Care Podcast. We at Evidence Care seek to empower better care every day in the lives of physicians across the country, hospitals that take care of patients, and for those we love and care about. Today, I'm joined by Jason Zachariah, the COO of LifePoint. Jason, I'm going to give you just a minute. Tell us a little bit about your story and your background.
Yeah,
how'd you end up here in this booth at this time at this conference?
Yeah, it's a fun reflection when I get that opportunity. And, you know, just looking back, and thank you, first of all, for having me. And just in terms of, you know, this healthcare ecosystem and just what this sessions conference means to not only Nashville, now the entire country. And we've even had guests from as far as Qatar come for this conference now. So just in 3 years. You know, it's just turned into an incredible rival event to many others, especially on the West Coast.
We sure hope so.
Yeah. So, you know, just my journey really started in, you know, at a young age. You know, I was an Eagle Scout. I knew that service was something that meant a lot to me, taking care of my community. I grew up in a small town, Minnesota. And dad was a physician, cardiologist, emigrated to the United States from India. And also had that kind of immigrant story, right? To travel to seek opportunity. But still stay close to your family and know what community means, even if it can be distant at times. With that, grew up in Minnesota till I was 13. So I saw this Mayo Clinic culture. It was a lot smaller town, smaller organization back then. But I knew what really good healthcare looked like and what a small town like Rochester, Minnesota could do when it came to rural healthcare, started by a father, his sons, and some nuns, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, it ended up rivaling the best healthcare in the world in London and New York and Vienna and other places. And so with that, kind of took that as probably going to be the doctor in the future, right?
Okay.
And ultimately ended up growing up junior high and high school in Florida, also where they built the Mayo Clinic. So kind of got to see how, through my dad's leadership, how he led physicians, how he led groups. He was ultimately COO of that hospital system down there and became CIO of the organization that was always physician led, right? So little did I know that ultimately it was carving my future. I ultimately didn't become a doctor, but knew that healthcare leadership was something that really fascinated me. And so even in undergraduate and college, kind of started to shape my future through my studies in terms of both the science side, but also the leadership and the economics, the delivery.
And where did you go to undergrad?
Duke for undergrad and then Northwestern for my MBA. And,
okay.
We won't
hold any of those against you.
Yeah,
those are fantastic schools.
It's your children at ACC rivals.
But you weren't pre-med.
So I started as pre-med, then ultimately, you know, still kept a biology, chemistry major, but also did a lot of economics coursework. And then ended up in Northwestern with a master's in biotech. And so actually I end up going more into the biotech industry in the first part of my career. So in my 20s. Okay. I was zigging and zagging, really, you know, was on Humira, one of the biggest drugs ever developed. I was on their international development team, got into manufacturing, other areas, just because I, you know, the biotech, the human genome, you know, discovery was a lot of promise. And so
you were right on the front lines.
Yeah. So it was fascinating through the 2000s to experience some of that. But, you know, ultimately, once I finished my MBA and just even, you know, through other connections, including my father, it was like I saw my leadership skills moving more towards being closer to the bedside.
Yeah.
And that led me to Kindred Healthcare. And they had a CEO and training program. And they said, we'll make you a CEO in 2 years.
Okay.
HCA had a development program. They were like 6-7 years.
Yes.
The big Catholic system in Chicago at that time where we were living, it was like 7-8 years. And so, you know, a little ambitious.
I was in the HCA system until I failed out. I couldn't keep up with the amount of moves they wanted me to make.
Yeah, you had to be open. That was one thing even Kindred said is you have to be open for the moves. And that probably continued to develop my story. I got my first CEO opportunity down in South Florida. So made the move with my family and then ultimately California, running 17 hospitals for Kindred out there. And then I took a switch within Kindred. We were a very diversified healthcare company, largely in the post-acute space, largest home health provider, LTAC, large skilled nursing rehab business. And we weren't really in the inpatient rehab hospital business,
right,
much like Encompass now, or formerly HealthSouth. And that was one area that the company said we got a niche into. And so they took a LTAC, long-term acute care hospital operator like myself, and said, we need to put a hospital leader into starting this hospital rehab business. And that's what really connected me to Nashville.
Okay.
There was an organization called Centaire,
yep.
Was a, you know, early start joint venture rehabilitation company. I liked that model because they were partnering with acute systems. Pat Foster, the CEO at the time, he was formerly with HealthSouth, and I don't think he wanted to sell his company to that organization. And he found that both, you know, probably our leadership styles, our organization, what we were seeking to do in the whole healthcare continuum really resonated with him. And ultimately, we got that opportunity to take his company. And it was about 8 hospitals that time with 3 opening up. And today, fast forward, we're going to be opening up another 10 next year. So we'll be at 60 hospitals in just a decade with his platform. So I give Pat Foster a lot of credit. But just going back to Nashville, you know, I saw this. It opened my eyes to just the amount of entrepreneurship, but also just strong organizations that have really taken healthcare to new levels, stretching, pushing it in a way through great talent and leaders like yourself. And, you know, I got the bug. And I said, ultimately, I want to get to Nashville someday. So we were living in Louisville, Kentucky at that time where Kindred Health headquarters were. Little did I know how many Kentucky native sons and daughters have really built this healthcare ecosystem here as well. Right.
Yeah.
And so that was ultimately my connection where I became president of Kindred Healthcare, ultimately built this great rehab business, you know, a lot of long-term acute care background, and was able to, you know, take that organization alongside Ben Breyer, our CEO. And we took it private as we sold off our home health division to Humana, creating their Humana at Home platform. And at that time, you know, also the pandemic came. I learned a lot as a leader to manage, you know, an LTAC, largely respiratory focused, high acuity health system.
Yes.
With over, at that time, was 90 LTAC hospitals serving so many communities
most
that
vulnerable
were that
folks
were struggling
during COVID. Holy
yeah, God. Exactly. Yeah. So saw that need for that niche really climb. In addition, our rehabilitation, so many hospitals needed to offload patients after they were stabilized and get the rehabilitation they needed in our rehab hospitals. And we were joint ventured with so many level 1, level 2, you know, trauma centers, health systems. And so you really saw this beauty of, you know, where our healthcare ecosystem, where at least at that time, Kindred Healthcare fit. And you see it in the most vulnerable time in this world's history. Right?
Yeah. So is LifePoint, how many acute care hospitals versus rehab versus LTACs do you all have today?
Yeah. So coming off the pandemic, that's where I think LifePoint really sought to diversify themselves, right? So as you're leading to your question, you know, largely a rural health system provider. And to have some extra arms and legs, we also had started a behavioral division within Kindred. And so getting that rehabilitation and behavioral arms to the organization to really diversify beyond even rural settings, you know, urban, suburban. So today now with this combined company that I get the privilege of being COO of, we're 60 acute care hospitals around the country. We have soon to be by the end of next year, 60 rehabilitation hospitals, 25 behavioral hospitals, and then 900 clinics that support all those services.
I think most people still think of LifePoint as just a traditional acute facility. Yeah. And you all diversified in a very unique way. There's a lot of health systems who are diversifying markets, diversifying in outpatient with ASCs and different physician traditional strategies. But for you And at LifePoint, the behavioral health angle is pretty unique. There's not a lot of folks doing that.
Yeah, I would say doing that in addition to like the acute care and the rehabilitation. That's right. And that's, I think, what makes us very unique. You know, UHS to some degree is in the acute and behavioral side, as are we. But, you know, that's, yeah, you're talking about more rarefied air. We're, you know, David likes to say we'd like to do the hard with heart.
Okay.
And, you know, I take great pride in that. You know, we're an organization at scale that serves the most, you know, underserved individuals in our, you know, U.S. Communities. And, you know, when you think about the behavioral crisis in America, you think about the rural healthcare divide between urban and suburban outcomes to rural outcomes. And then this aging population of America, and our rehab business average age is about 72. And then also in so many of our rural communities, it's expensive to live in Arizona and Florida. Those aren't the places to retire as easily anymore. So there's a lot of aging in place that happens in our rural communities as well. So,
Jason, tell me a little bit about your leadership style, and maybe where are some of the nuggets along the way that kind of made you who you are and how you lead today?
I appreciate that question. You know, I've regarded myself maybe as just as a, you know, someone who really believes in that strong servant leadership capacity. You know, I just believe so much in the humility and, you know, getting behind your people and giving your team so much of the credit, but also making sure you're skilling them in the right ways, right? Investing in them. And, you know, at this point in my career, I can look back and see, man, how many, you know, hospital presidents and CEOs have, you know, have been able to mentor, and, you know, a variety of support domains that, you know, from VPs to senior VPs. It's been fun to see how you create that family atmosphere. I think that's a lot of what David Dill attracted me to the organization, because how he leads by. And I think he saw that in me of how I like to create. And, you know, those, that family connection, it falls so well with our rural image. And, you know, maybe we're folksy, but we just so believe in that, you know, family, the humility. It's good to be ambitious and wanting big things, but you can do it in a way that's with inclusive growth. And that inclusion aspect is so important. That belonging is something that I recognize that our leaders have to continue to foster, that all the way down to the bedside, to the gym side. And when you create that, those atmospheres, great outcomes happen. You're able to thrive and do the great mission work that we do. And so those are just kind of some of the character elements that I want to make sure I see in leaders, that I'm expressing myself, living our core values, and both personally and professionally every day. So.
That's awesome. Your reputation precedes you, that you're living that out. So in terms of sessions, we're at the third annual Nashville Healthcare Sessions Conference this week. A lot bigger crowd, some great speakers. I know all of us get pulled in and out of all these sessions, but have you heard any nuggets or inspiration or anything innovative that caught your attention?
Yeah, I think during one of the sessions, you know, Rob Allen was speaking, CEO of Intermountain Healthcare. And, you know, I could have a lot of admiration for his system. You know, they're both urban and rural, and, you know, the interior west that they cover. And, you know, it's fascinating to see someone who's so committed to this Nashville Healthcare Council as a fellow, but he's out in Salt Lake City, right?
Yes.
In the Mountain West. And so it clearly shows the impact that Nashville, as well as this, these sessions and our council have on the US healthcare system when you see a leader like him. So as Rob was talking about some of his innovation within, I always feel like, you know, you still gotta be consumer oriented around that. But, you know, he is so focused on, you know, innovation that really empowers and enables his clinicians, right? If your caregivers are bought in and they're seeing the value of the innovation, they're really the ones that are going to then make all the good stuff happen, right? From patient experience to quality, safety. And, you know, he was sharing just, you know, even though I think they're an Epic shop, how they've partnered with Microsoft to bring, you know, AI capabilities for, you know, ambient listening and dictation for their nurses. You know, you see a lot on the physician side, especially in clinical settings, maybe in urgent care, really starting to rapidly escalate. But he's one that's taken it and at scale done it within Intermountain. And he was expressing how he's had a 40% reduction in charting by nurses. Like, that is gold. If I mean, I'm happy if I can get 10% reduction, if they're achieving 40%. So right away, I'm calling Al Smith, our CIO afterwards. We're a Microsoft partner. We have Epic in a few of our hospitals, but a variety of other EMRs. And like, how do we get what Rob's doing there and embed it? That was, you know, one to really just resonate with me on clinician centered.
Yeah, they've done an exceptional job of really outlining very specific problems where they bring in specific partners with expected outcomes. And it puts everybody on the same page. We have the privilege of being one of their premier partners, vetted in Epic and getting ready to expand.
It's great to hear.
As they expand Epic. So
we got to talk more offline about these opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. We're happy to. The which in today's environment, I think is hard. Someone told me last night over 50% of the people here are folks trying to get into the hospitals and the health plans to sell whatever it is their product does. And anecdotally, there was a quip that maybe 50% of those products actually work. Mm-hmm. And I think in our healthcare system, we desperately need things that work, things that scale, things that can bring real results, because we've got to execute faster, lower margins,
absolutely,
more efficient with less resources. I mean, there's less physicians, especially in the rural markets. So are there anything innovative that has kind of caught your attention other than Microsoft at Intermountain that whether here or over the past year or so has kind of gotten you excited about bringing some of the new, we'll call it health system 2.0, to bear? Because we've got all of these facilities, all of these organizations, all of these people who depend on us and our leadership. And I'm just curious what you've come across.
You know, one of the guests here, I don't know if it was first year or second year, but Andrew Karp in Palantir,
yes,
right? That is one that I've helped to lead within the organization, that partnership. We do still have a lot of disconnected systems, right? I mean, just from everything from our wrist packs, laboratory information systems, to a potpourri of EMRs that we've acquired over the years, you know, and then you take your whole back office system. And we're also in the process of moving Oracle into all of our finance, supply chain, human capital management systems. So how do you get that connectedness, right? Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm, you know, you hear the story of Palantir going all the way back to unfortunately, the 9/11 situation, where we have all these great institutions of government and law enforcement and CIA and military, but none of their systems were talking to each other. It's ultimately right. Get these bad actors.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Palantir going from a counterterrorism platform to go helping solve some of the biggest challenges in healthcare through what they call their Foundry system, something we've made some big bets on, connecting our care through our data, through our, you know, vital systems that our clinicians are using on a daily basis, and really solving for both workflow and patient safety issues. And so, you know, workflow, you know, with 60 hospitals, well, on the acute side, we can apply this across our rehab behavioral, really developing an air traffic control system to see our whole throughput through our entire system. We can now have on our Palantir system. Our nurse supervisors, our house supervisors run the hospital, as you know, right?
Absolutely.
And they sometimes are just literally a paper in their smock or a clipboard running, you know, sometimes $100 million hospitals for us. And, you know, it's like, just you observe that. And I hope we look back and go, I can't believe that. But now with the tablet and the Palantir engine behind, literally seeing where from transfer center to ED, PACU, what beds are turning over at what rates to literally future schedule, you know, for the next shift, they can see where all those flows are coming right in a consolidated way. And that's changing our length of stay. It's changing our patient experience scores from our ED all the way through our hospital. It's saving lives, honestly. And
that's amazing.
And then on the other side of it, you know, you see how septicemia kills so many, you know, patients in hospitals, either coming in with it or they develop it. And interesting stat, for every hour a patient that is septic, you know, is not intervened by an antibiotic or the bundle, is a 10% less chance of survival.
Okay.
So when you start to think about hospital mortality and readmission, you know, work we're doing with Palantir is creating a beacon system, be proactively alerting both physician and nurse by taking lab values, you know, vitals, an image, you know, all those things that might show that infection is rampant and there's a, you know, a reaction happening. And that allows for much quicker time reaction.
We've
already
amazing.
Seen that enhanced bundle compliance to intervention by matters of several hours in some cases. So those are all ways by which I get excited about where AI is moving and where data is helping, once again, being clinician centered on this, because ultimately the consumer, the patient, is the beneficiary of this good work.
I'm going to come back. I got lots of questions on that one after the podcast. But in terms of myths about hospital operations and healthcare that you would kind of wish the myth might disappear or die? What, any myths that you think people have this preconceived notion?
Yeah, you know, it was surprising just to see how many of our legislators and politicians, you know, and, you know, as we went through this one big, beautiful bill that turned into an act.
Yes.
Of this idea that, you know, hospital systems are just flush with, you know, resources and cash, and, you know, and that just kind of flows into where, you know, these Medicaid supplemental programs have been so important to counter this massive amount of inflation that we're seeing, particularly in professional fees, our deserving clinical workforce that has spent their life's work, you know, training, schooling. They carry so much of the burden of the care and deserve a fair wage, and, you know, let alone the cost of supplies and implants. And so ultimately, at the end of the day, the hospital becomes this catch-all. And so, you know, I still can't believe, you know, with, even though they have healthcare aides and thought leaders and those that have even practiced in the healthcare field, fortunately, Rick Scott didn't do us any favors as, yeah, you know, being a renowned healthcare leader, that now senator, really saying that, you know, and maybe he was reflecting on his experience, but not everyone's like that. And no, rural healthcare is tough. Behavioral healthcare is tough. Hearing even Dr. Omar Lateef, CEO of Rush, talking about 1% margins, and he's running one of the biggest health systems and even safety net hospitals in the Chicagoland area. You know, it's just, it's fascinating to me that more of the public thinks that we're just, you know, flush with resources and treasure to be able to provide this unlimited care.
Yeah.
And it opened my eyes that not just American Hospital Association, we got to do a better job telling the public of how vital we are to the health and infrastructure of every community in this country, but that we've got to, you know, be resourced appropriately for it.
Well, we hope they'll listen to this podcast and hear some of that.
Yeah.
Last question, and thank you for your time today, Jason. What book in the last 6 to 12 months has kind of piqued your curiosity or taught you something you didn't know already?
Yeah, you know, I always like to look back in history a little bit. And, you know, when times are tough, you know, I was mentioning the hard with heart. And I think a lot of us are feeling that way, from OBBA to this data AI revolution that's happening, to this, you know, continued silver tsunami of our aging population we have to continue to address that has so many comorbidities. And then, you know, let alone, you know, the regulatory and the, you know, the legal, you know, headwinds we're always facing as operators, and how do we pay for it? And, you know, I look back and I think, okay, what are times that, you know, countries or nation states or, you know, societies been going through tough changes? And I look back at, obviously, one is the Civil War, right? And Leadership Lessons by Lincoln was a book that someone turned me on to.
Great,
right? And
book,
you know, you see someone who you just, you've studied as, you know, more of the politician, but to see the man and how many, you know, contrarian things he was dealing with at any given time, right? Trying to still defeat your enemy and still preserve an union. When you think about, you know, a leader that has to think about, you know, waging battle and resourcing all that, but still thinking about humanity and equality and eliminating slavery. And just to see this kind of man that lived in the paradox of leadership. And I then take that to healthcare, right?
Yeah.
We talk about margin, no mission, right? You know, we talk about the ability to grow and expand. And for our frontline caregivers, they want to know that they're doing a good job for that N equals one, that patient right in front of them, right? Not how many more fence posts we can put out there in the ambulatory setting or what next joint venture partnership I'm going to create. And so it's always finding that paradox of leadership, that go back to inclusive growth, that everyone feels either it's through their own growth personally, clinical ladders, leadership ladders, to the actual organization growing, and but everyone feeling a part of that and feeling a part of something bigger than themselves. And I think Lincoln did something spectacular during that time as I read this book. But
yeah,
seeing each of these individual lessons and those paradoxes of leadership that he was going to say, you know, and I look it back, lead with kindness and still, you know, grow and, you know, be fair and firm. But, you know, those are just the things that you always have to have the and part of it, right?
And both and.
Yeah.
I'm going to go pick up the book today. People have told me about this. Now you've got me extremely excited.
Yeah, it's a great, it's an easy read. And, you know, history always has the ability to teach us lessons for the future too.
It does.
Especially with great leaders like Lincoln.
Well, we're excited about your leadership at a great organization at LifePoint Health. And Jason, thank you so much for your time today on the Better Care Podcast.
Thank you, Bo. Really appreciate you having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Better Care Podcast. To ensure you never miss an episode, we encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on your preferred platform. Additionally, your ratings and reviews are invaluable in helping us reach a wider audience. Please consider leaving a review, and if you do, email us a screenshot at marketing@evidence.care, and we'll send you a thank you gift. For access to exclusive content and further healthcare insights created by Evidence Care, please visit evidence.care/bettercarepodcast and subscribe to our email list. We appreciate your support and look forward to connecting soon.